Let me show you where it is used as a proper name. In Genesis chapter 4. And verse 25. And Adam knew his wife. There it is a proper name. So there is used as a proper name. But you may say, what am I talking about now? I am saying that the word Adam means anthropos, and that includes women. Includes male and female. And includes children as well. Girls and boys. Now, I explained that in the paper. I'm just clearing the air again, so you know, you can go back on the paper if you like to read it. And the upshot of that is that neither the male nor the female looks more like God than the other. So, you know, males and females, young and old alike, sick and healthy, they all are in the image of God, irrespective of, you know, his differences. And man was made of flesh for this reason. He was made of flesh because he needs to be tied to the rest of creation. So, man then needs food to eat. So he has to... you say, could God have made him differently? Of course, if you start a sentence, could God? The answer is yes. So that no matter what you say, providing you give me a legitimate English sentence. Right. If you give a sentence, could God? The answer is yes. So he is... Man by body is linked to all creation. But also, because he can reproduce, he is linked to every other human being on the face of the earth. And that's the meaning of the word flesh in the Hebrew language. You may want to keep in mind Romans 14. And verse 7. For none of us lives to himself, and no man dies to himself. Now, this is a Hebrew concept of man. In other words, if we had to spend the time not discussing theology, but anthropology, then we have to discuss that portion to show that in Hebrew thought, human beings are linked together. And that's not the concept that we have today. Because the concepts in the West I'm talking about Europe, Western Europe, and the United States. The concepts are Greek. So, in the United States, without realizing it, you have ancient Greek concepts. The laws you have are Roman, because they, you know, the Constitution, for instance, comes from John Locke, the English philosopher, he's the one who wrote it up, and that can be traced back to the Roman system of laws, not to any Greek system of laws, but to a Roman one. The Romans were excelled in that area because it's administrative. They could do whatever is useful, and so on. They had good ideas regarding government. And the Romans had other good ideas, for example, in construction, in building roads. They are the masters. They are the best in the world for engineering of roads. And the Roman roads exist to this day and are still being used. So, talking about things that last. In where I live, we had a new asphalt put on the road, and already there are weeds coming up in it. And yet, if you leave those weeds, they come every week and stuff, then they destroy the weeds because they know what the weeds will do. The weeds will ruin the road, crack it. So, but the Roman roads are not cracked. You can see how you study the way the Romans made the roads and you find it's an art. It's very elaborate, and the way they made the roads. And they drain very well as well. They're made to drain the water. People go to Philippi and they are amazed to see the toilets, which are even more modern than anything we have today. It's interesting to see that because there's always running water. Now you may see where do they, does, you know, do they flush to? Well, I do not know if they had a, I don't think they had a system for doing that part, but there is, the city part is fine. City part is taken care of. But you mustn't think that we are very advanced in that area either. Not if you live in London and you know what happens to the Thames. Receives everything that's produced in London. Right. And where do the people take the water to clean it from? From the Thames. Right. And in the United States, we are not any better either, because toxic waste, what happens to it? Where do we dump it? Canada has a problem. Canada says we don't know what to do with toxic waste. And they are always looking for new sites. Where to put the toxic element? And nobody wants it in his backyard. So many nations today take and dump it in the ocean, and we have all these problems coming up as to whether we should pollute the oceans. All right, the point I'm making is that that flesh then means we are all tied together. And I was saying that we mustn't be guided by the Greek concept that we grew up with, because the Bible is not a Greek book. It is a Semitic book. It's not a Western book. See, when the Protestants say it's God, I and my Bible. Now, that is an individuality that is painfully fought against in the Old Testament. The Old Testament is not tolerant of that kind of approach. Of I am an individual, God is there for me, and I and God can have a pact together. Now, that is a painful reality of the modern world. The church has to accept it today, and we go to people and say, you must make a pact with God yourself, as an individual. We have to do that, because society has gone astray, and we are trying to patch things up. Now, in the Bible then, we know that man was made of flesh. Look, I did not cover these things the same way in the earlier conference. This is better. It's clearer now, see? Because now we don't have so many questions coming up. I have all the questions from the past. That way I can include extra information. But then, he had to make man out of flesh for this reason. And man became he gave him a breath of life. We have sung Daniel already. And man became a living soul. Now, I don't like the translation soul. Nefesh in Hebrew. But if you say a living body, that's strange. It's strange in Hebrew, a living body. I am not sure if you can even say that in Hebrew. Definitely you don't find that in the Old Testament. A living body? What is that? What is a living body? See, man, did man become a body? Now that is, if we are to go into a different kind of theology, if we had to do a full course in theology, we would have to study what it is, what was Adam? We have to ask ourselves, was Adam here the first human being, or was he the totality of mankind as well? Now, definitely he was the first human being. But was he more than that? The Catholic Church says, yes, he was. Man, Adam is a society. The Protestants, that means the people who rebelled against Rome, said, no, he isn't. Man is an individual. So, what is Adam? Does Adam represent the individual, or does Adam represent mankind? And that determines the doctrine of sin, which determines the doctrine of grace, which determines the doctrine of obedience, which determines, and so on, we go on from there, right, to build on that, to see where it goes. And you will find that once you upset one area, you're going to find that you have to upset everything else after that. Definitely, according to the Hebrew thought then, man is flesh, means he is joined to other people. Man is a social being, along the lines of what Aristotle said, when he said that man is a social animal. And of course, using the word animal in the sense of being animate. So if you ask a Jew of the time when Moses was alive, and you said to him, where lies my individuality in the Greek sense, or in the American sense for that matter? See, we are Americans. We are individuals. I have my rights. Okay? You say, now, I want to find that. Where? I am an individual. In America, we say, you must not touch me. You touch me, I'll sue you. Because my body is mine. Right? Part of myself. This determines my individuality. That's where my individual ends. I am there, and everything that belongs to me. So, you cannot steal my car or take you to court. It's my car. It's my arm, it's my leg, it's my head, and so on. If you ask a man there, where lies this kind of individuality in your concepts, he would say, it lies in the ruach. I better put it separately. So we don't raise questions. Let me write in different chalk here. Ruach, which means spirit. So it lies in my spirit. That's totally different from what a Greek person would say and what an American would say. So in Hebrew thought then we are man is flesh, man is ruach, and so let me erase part of this thing. What should I erase? I can erase that. Leave that for the rest of it on there. And if I say, so, man is made of flesh. So that's the body. And he has a ruach. That's spirit. south. If you look at your Bible, you will find that the word neshama also is used. But I will not debate that at all, because neshama means spirit, but it has to do with the history of the texts and the way the Bible was updated. In other words, the Bible was made to be used, and the editors used the word neshama sometimes to avoid the concept of pantheism, and that's a different kind of discussion. So definitely, it makes no difference. It means spirit anyway. So neshama and ruach means spirit. So nothing important hangs on that. And then, together, when you join these two together, you get nefesh. In English, you get a soul. I don't like the word soul by itself, because it's used in so many contexts in the Bible. Especially in Hebrew. So I want to sort of simplify things a little bit by saying flesh plus spirit equals soul. That's what I'm going to say. Flesh plus spirit equals soul. That's simplified. So the Hebrew word nefesh, the Hebrew word for soul, is exactly as Mr. Armstrong said, the whole man. That's the man. That's the man who is complete. Now, let's spell it out now in terms of the flesh and what I wrote on the bottom of the board. We have to say that man knows the physical world around him through the flesh. And man knows God through the spirit. And he has his individuality in the ruach. That's where his real self is. That's where the self. So this is self. This is where the self is. Where the self is. Now, let's discuss, first, before I go on, how much time do we have? All right. So we can ask a question: how are animals made? Is man made the same way as the animals? Obviously, he is different. The animals are made of matter, the same way as man is made of matter. They are not made of spirit. They don't have, because man is not made of spirit. But angels are spirit, are spirits. Or if you like, for the moment, I don't mind using the word spirit beings. Although I will quibble about the word beings, because it's not acceptable, but I will explain that later on. So So animals then are made of matter. So we have things made solely of matter, animals. And we have things made solely of spirit. Made of spirit, things which are spirit. That's angels. The only person, the only creation of God that is both man, matter, and spirit is man. And I'm now, please do not pick me up on the use of the word spirit at the moment. What I mean is, I do not mean there is a substance called spirit. I mean the effects of the spirit. So God then made man out of matter and breathed on him the breath of life. That's all that happened. But the effects of that breathing are on man. That's what I mean by when I say man is made of matter and spirit. I clarify that so that nobody will think that I am saying that man is made of two substances. One substance being matter and another substance being called being spirit. Nothing like that is happening. So I am saying that man is the only being that is physical. That means he has parts, is in space, in time, and is limited. And at the same time, is spirit in the sense that he has a mind without parts, not in space, immortal. Now you have to think about that, immortal, because the mind does not die. Human beings die, minds don't die, thoughts do not die, because they are not made of, they are not compound things. And also unlimited. Man is unlimited? Amazing. Yes, look at imagination. Imagination is a semblance of the divine. You can use your imagination and you create. Composers, poets, writers use imagination all the time. It's a wonderful gift. So here is a human being then, is in space, bodily, but in mind he is not in space. In mind he is not anywhere. In mind he is transcendent, he is immortal, he is unlimited. We tend to minimize the creation of man. In the same way that people bring God down into space and time and make a mistake, they also minimize man and they bring him down into either to the animal level or something like that, and therefore they go wrong that way as well. Of course, when you kill a human being, you are reducing him even lower than the animal. Now let's discuss plants. The plants are living bodies. They have life. Now I already said that man was made of flesh to be tied to the rest of the creation. We are tied to the vegetables and to potatoes, right? And so potatoes and we are connected. We are tied to nuts, whether we like it or not. So, animals, plants, and man have one thing in common, that is the principle of life. That is the constituent of being alive. In man, we have God's breath. That's what we call God's spirit in man. And that is what makes man tick, make him alive. But the animals, the trees, the flowers, so on, they all have life in the same way. For example, you may say, well, do they grow like we grow? Do they grow? Yes, they grow, right? They grow too. So they have a semblance of growth the same way as we do. That's what we mean by life. They reproduce. That's what we mean by life. Do they move? Well, after a fashion they do. Yes, they move towards the sun. That's a limited kind of motion. We have greater motion than they do. They move with the wind. That's a baby motion, right? If you like. Do they have a social life? You can argue about that too if you say, yes, there's a fig tree and a baby fig tree, you know, coming right under next to it. You say, that's not what I mean by social life. Well, that's all you get. Sorry. That's how God decided to make things. That's the boundary that He created. That's how far they will go. You can say the plants, some plants climb. Oh yes, they climb. We climb, they climb. In fact, they climb better than we do. Some plants refuse to die or to grow. For example, I have a fig tree in my backyard and it doesn't my wife and I were sitting down wondering what happened to it. Why doesn't it produce? And to the extent, it does give us some figs, but we said it doesn't do anything else. It doesn't grow. We spend all the time looking after it, and it doesn't sort of shape the way we want it to shape. So I said to my wife the other day, I said, I expected it to grow full on the sides. And she says, how can it grow on the sides? She said, I have been clipping the sides, you know, so it won't grow that way. I want it to grow upwards. And I said, how can it grow upwards? I've been clipping the top myself. So she'd been clipping the sides, and I've been clipping the top. And we'd be amazed that this fig tree remained the same. It remains the same size. Well, if it had been alive, if God had given it a little more intelligence, He would have called us names, right? If it had emotions, it would have been very unhappy. But man was given emotions. Man is in God's image. Man can do more things because God willed it that way. So you say, what is the difference between man and the animals? What? God's will. God said, I will man to be in my image. So He made man in the image of God. God knows. Man knows. God loves. Man loves. God has values. Man has the values. God exercises His will. Man exercises His will. And man is the highest order of the beings we find created in Genesis chapter 1. You find that it's an ascending order. God creates the heavens and the earth, matter in other words. Then you find that He creates trees, and then animals, and then human beings. So there is an ascending order of consciousness. So then, in what way is man different from the animals and the trees? He's different in that he has intellect. So when God willed man to be in His own image, then He willed that man would have an intellect. That he has the ability to use abstraction and to reflect, to think, in other words. And we said also, he gave him this, and we talk all that, we talk about that in terms of a spirit in man. When we refer to a spirit in man, that's what we mean. We mean the ability to have intellect, to abstract, to reflect, to use imagination, and so on. And then we said, we asked the question earlier, where is the spirit in man? And we said, it isn't anywhere. It is like gravity. So, and I mentioned at that time that we should not think of it in terms of something like butter on toast. That's not like that, but like gravity on toast. So, the spirit in man is not in space. I also mentioned I don't like the word soul. Let me clarify that. How much time do we have? Oh, very good. See, the word soul is the Bible says, man became a living soul. There it means, you can say, a living being, all right? In Genesis 38, verse 8, it says, the soul of my son longs for. That means the desiring part. The desiring part. And then in 1 Peter 2:11, speaks about things which war against the soul. There it means against the spirit. So that's what I don't like about the word soul. It's a doofer. It will do for this and do for that. In Luke 1:46, my soul doth magnify the Lord. It means my spirit again. So the word soul then has two meanings in English. It has a public reference and a private reference. The public one is the being, and the private one is the inner inside us. In English, when you say 15 souls lost their died on a ship, how many souls died? That's the public reference. I have a question here on made in the image of God. But perhaps this question is a good point to break off on, because we are breaking in the middle of the discussion of part 5. So I would like to answer the question on the image of God. And also, and then I will continue with the free will, which is part 5 also. Because that would take a long time to explain. So it may be better to stop here and then pick it up when we come back.